PR moves wildly fast nowadays. So it used to move fast before the internet, and it moves even faster now. Media outlets will often put up a story before they have all the facts and just update it as they go. I would say most firms aren't ready. It takes time and foresight to put together a plan and to know how to respond. And it takes working with professionals to help you respond. And if you don't have a relationship with a PR person when that happens, that's going to make it even more difficult.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Answering Legal's Everything Except the Law podcast. I am your host, Nick Werker. If this is your first time tuning in, this is the podcast where we share expert advice on all the parts of running a law firm that attorneys weren't exactly trained for back in law school. Now, today we are welcoming back an old friend of the podcast. She was kind enough to be the first ever guest. I didn't even remember that. The first ever guest of Everything Except the Law back in the summer of 2020. Oh, my God. Wow. Where does time go?
I know.
Now she's returning to share her law firm PR expertise in our 40th episode. Michelle Calcote King, the principal and president of Reputation Inc., joins me now. It's great to have you back, Michelle, even though we're no strangers.
To be back. I know it. Yeah, excited to do this.
Now that I am remembering that you were the first guest, I remember. Oh my God, that's way too long ago. Okay, that's scary to think about. So for those who may have missed your first appearance on our show, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your company, Reputation Inc.?
Yeah. So I'm the principal. I'm the founder of Reputation Inc. We are a public relations and content marketing agency for professional services firms, mostly law firms, but we also work with architecture, engineering, and construction firms as well. So we do all the publicity, getting lawyers in the media, a lot of content writing, social media, that kind of thing.
So we obviously, I just mentioned that we had you on the show in 2020, but a lot has changed in the world since then. What are some of the law firm PR trends that have really caught your attention over the past few years? Like what's the new fad?
Yeah, I would say, it's interesting. The biggest new fad is ChatGPT. You know, that's sort of everywhere right now. And it's funny to watch different industries react to it. So you've got the legal industry reacting from a legal perspective. This is going to take our jobs away. But from a PR and content perspective, that's what it does. It generates content. So it's really shining a light, one, just on the importance of good content, not just crap that's generated by, you know, an algorithm. But you know, more and more, there's going to be these tools available, and really, it's the winners are the ones that kind of learn how to use it to enhance what they do. So I'm not stressing about it. It's just more how do we leverage it to generate more content and ideas for the firms that we work with. COVID was a big, you know, for everybody, it really was. But law firms, especially, one thing I noticed, and I've heard other people talk about this, is just how quickly law firms kind of generated so much content around COVID at the time. And then there were a lot of learnings that kind of came out of that. So a lot of law firms kind of rushed to put out that content, which they should have done. It was really important to kind of be an expert and be a thought leader at that time. But it also kind of showed how bad firms can be at getting this content done in a way that's effective. So there's a lot of studies that kind of analyzed that. And then, you know, the other thing that continues to be a trend, it's not new, but I keep seeing it go more and more, is diversity. You know, DEI requirements, especially big corporate clients are pushing law firms to showcase that they have, diverse attorney teams. But that's going to continue to be a big, topic in the industry, and law firms are going to be able to talk about their culture more and have to include diversity in that, you know, in that conversation.
So ChatGPT is really new, right?
Yeah.
And it really is like a hot topic right now, but I just want to tell this 'cause I think it's so funny. the company Facebook page, Answering Legal, is hooked up to my personal Facebook page because I don't post anything crazy. Yeah. And I'm not a crazy person, really. I'm very boring. And so I get all of the notifications to my phone when somebody comments on like one of our ads or a post that we put up, so on and so forth. So a couple of weeks ago, ChatGPT was really in the news. Everybody's, and on every single one of the our ads that was running, this one guy, I don't know even how you find the ads because you can't like search through the page.
Yeah.
He commented on every single one, ChatGPT, you're cooked. And I was like, how dramatic is
That's
that?
That's so strange. If you have to monitor social media comments for any brands, it's wild what you'll get. Yeah, it really is nuts.
I understand people who like, they'll bash you because that's just Facebook comments, or people have questions and I answer them. I'm fine with all that. But the ChatGPT, you're cooked. I was like,
yeah, that's very strange.
Okay, cool. Go use ChatGPT for that. You're welcome to it. So I think most lawyers are familiar with the concept of public relations, obviously. But I don't think that, and truly I believe this, I don't think many fully understand the value that can come from taking part in PR-related activities. So what type of impact have you seen public relations make on the law firms that you've worked with over the years?
Yeah, it's helpful. Here's how I explain it when talking to clients. So there's two kind of overarching goals with the kind of marketing mix that you can have. You can have lead generation tactics, and then on the, which are tactics that drive a potential lead to your website to convert, or phone, or whatever it is. Typically nowadays it's over the internet. And they go into your funnel, and you want, your goal is to convert them to a lead. Well, PR is on the brand awareness side of things. So PR is not a lead generating tactic. It can be, it certainly can, but that's not typically, that's not the goal, and that's not the outcome. The outcome is awareness and credibility, so that when you are driving those leads, when you get a lead, your chance of converting them into a client is much higher, and much higher for them to even pay attention to your lead generation marketing tactics. So, and for law firms especially, credibility through those brand awareness tactics is kind of often the crucial deciding factor as to whether someone is going to work with a firm. So that's the role PR plays. It's that brand awareness, making people go, okay, I've heard of this firm before, you know, they seem, or I saw them in the news, or when they become a lead, they go and do that Google search and they find articles about the firm. So that's the role it plays. And it's a pretty important role, again, for law firms that where credibility is such a, you know, an important factor for buyers of legal services. You know, and I've seen it, I've certainly seen coverage directly lead to client, you know, a law firm bringing on new clients. But it's not, I don't ever, I'm, you know, clients comes to me and says they want to drive leads. PR is not your number one tactic. So really, it's part of the bigger marketing mix that, you know, that works together in tandem with that. And then, it helps lead to other things. You know, if lawyers want to become, get speaking engagements, other things like that, being quoted in the media helps a lot. Because there's just, it's more difficult nowadays for people to kind of sort through all the crap out there. And they use the media to be that verifying source to make sure that this particular lawyer who wants to speak at an event or whatever it is legitimate, is credible. So that's really kind of how I explain it.
I think of when I was first learning SEO, right? Mm-hmm. I think of SEO as like your Google reputation management, mm-hmm. right? You sort of, in Google's way, you submit all of these, like your reputation, your reviews. You don't use these underhanded spammy techniques in order to get traffic. So if you, I mean, there's a lot of parallels that you can make from that. And
And
one of the things that
PR helps with SEO tremendously. I forgot to mention that. So yeah,
exactly. And because it attributes to your reputation.
Yeah.
And so I, for me, one of the most powerful things that when we started this business was storytelling mm-hmm. when it came to our reputation, because
yeah.
a lot of people, like, there's nothing really super exciting at the surface level of like phone answering, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it in the lens of storytelling, and I think about storytelling as like the NFL, for better or for worse, the NFL tells a lot of stories. Mm-hmm. Each player you watch, oh, there's the story about this guy and he overcame this and this person overcame that and the team had adversity, and they're really good at telling stories.
Yeah.
So what PR strategies can lawyers use to effectively tell the story of their practice if you sort of view law at the surface level of, you know, he's just handling traffic tickets, or he's just doing this. How can you sort of tell a story?
Yeah, it's it is a skill, and that's honestly what we help our law firm clients do a lot of the times. As we get on the phone, and we have a series of questions that we ask. I use the term knowledge extraction a lot. I hire a lot of former journalists who are used to sort of poking around and finding stories. So they've been trained to do that for many years. So it's getting on the phone with a lawyer and kind of hearing about their cases. You know, and we ask things about, tell me what are the questions your clients are asking? Tell me about a recent case where you used a novel legal strategy. Was there a notable damages amount? How can we, you know, so there typically is a built-in story arc within, you know, any kind of case or matter. There's a struggle, there's high stakes, there's meaningful outcomes. So it's learning to kind of identify that and then build it into a story and not get too deep. I think where a lot of lawyers stumble is they've been trained for many, many years to write and think like lawyers, and it's not the kind of writing or thinking that lends well to the media, because they have to really, really resist the urge to be overly formal, to have all the legalese in that language, and to really cut to the point. Or, you know, the other trick I find is not just talking about themselves, you know, and finding being okay with, well, you know, the media are going to find this part of the story interesting, and then we hope that they cover the great stuff about you in that, but we can't go and pitch it about the, you know, look how wonderful you did. Sometimes we can, but it's, you know, and the best way to learn that is to really kind of be a consumer of the media that you want to get into, and track them. Cause I'll have clients sometimes, you know, come to me and say, oh, you know, we just, launched a new website. We want to put out a press release about that. And I say, well, how many times have you seen a, you know, a news piece about a new website? You know, you haven't. So that's where, you know, or, you know, a certain client that's very niche and small. Well, you know, if we pay you, we want to get this national media attention. Well, when was the last time you saw, you know, a firm like yours on CNN, you know, and how do we, so, and there are times where it's a small little firm, but it's because they're tied to a big national story. They're involved in a big national case. So it's learning what the media covers, and the media covers, you know, it goes back to this idea about what social media has impacted our brains, because social media algorithms are giving you the unusual. They're giving you, that's what they're trained to do. So if you're looking at social media all the time and thinking this is how the world is, you might become that person that thinks everything is dire. But algorithms, just like the news does, is they're trained to give you the unusual. So once you start kind of realizing that, and then you kind of pick out that, you know, human interest. And then the other thing too is news is just about what's new and different, you know? So there's a place, and you as a marketer, you know, you're trained to kind of find evergreen content and certain types of content, but PR and news has to be recent, typically, you know, it's a bigger story with a recent hook to it as to why they're telling that bigger story. The only place that where more evergreen thought leadership or content works is more on the thought leadership side. But then even then, you've kind of got to have why are we talking about this now? So timeliness is probably the number one thing I often talk to clients about, is, you know, what happened to make this a relevant topic at the time right now. And then you got to think about things like geography. So a story might be really relevant in to a small market. So, you know, like the stories about local lawyer does big thing, you know, that story is not going to run in the big media outlet, but it might run in their local newspaper because the media likes to cover, you know, stories of people in their local vicinity doing big stuff. So that's often what we're doing too, is we're kind of figuring out where would this work. So what's that target audience for that? So
say a lawyer or a law firm or somebody who wants to engage in a PR strategy has their idea. Let's assume that it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Because when I watched this back and I listened to the part about you saying what clients want from you before their expectations are set, I'm going to see my eye roll and I'm going to laugh. So let's assume it's a good idea. Yeah. It's a well thought out strategy. The next step is obviously to approach a reporter or a journalist with this idea. Yeah. So when doing that, when reaching out to the media or a reporter or editor, whoever it may be, mm-hmm. what are some of the biggest do's and don'ts? How do you reach out to the media?
So the number one pet peeve I hear journalists say is that the person did not research whether they cover the kinds of stories that they just got pitched, you know, whether it's their beat, whether they've already covered it. So, you know, that's where Google's your friend. Go on the media outlet's website, see what they're covering. They typically list beats, you know, on the media contact info page. So figure out if you're pitching the right person and do they cover these kind of stories. Then it's a very brief email, you know, I'll put sometimes in caps, you know, story idea, colon, you know, get it. Cause they get hundreds of emails every day. So, be very brief and, don't bury the lead. And that's the other big sin I see lawyers do with a lot of their writing is, the lead is way far, you know, it's too much. So you're trying not to make a journalist do extra work to figure out what story you're pitching. So when I'm talking to clients, I'll often say, what would be that ideal headline for you? And so we start there, you know, if it's kind of never going to happen, like law firm managing partners, the best looking man ever, you know, whatever, but I ask them to think through. Yeah, exactly. What's that ideal headline? And if you start at that headline, then you can kind of, then you know what that story is that you're looking for and you can pitch it to the journalist. So you're trying to say, hey, Mr. Journalist, I've researched you. I see that you cover these kind of stories. And I think this one is going to be interesting because the reporter has an audience to audiences needs to meet. So you've got to speak to them about why their audience would find this interesting. So I know that you cover this kind of story. These are your readers. And this is what I think would be interesting. And then just a couple of bullet points that outline the story. And then the credibility. Why should you be the one? Why are you credible enough to either write this article or be interviewed or whatever it is? So those are kind of the elements that we're putting together when we write a pitch, but usually it's a paragraph. And then you're outlining what the story would be. If it's a visual story, meaning it's going to be really highly visual and you're pitching a broadcast station, explain that, say, you know, hey, I could get you some good shots of this. Or if you've got access to, for example, if a client would be willing to come on camera or be interviewed, I've talked to my client, I have permission, you know, we pitched a story for a New Orleans law firm, when New Orleans, introduced a new law allowing, sexual assault victims to bring the window, the time frame was, lengthened so that the statute of limitations, had not run out for many cases. So this law firm wanted to publicize the fact that it had a lot of experience with these, it was specific to the Catholic diocese, sexual assault claims. And so we went to the media with a victim, a sexual assault survivor and said, you know, here's her story. Here's what she can talk about. We've briefed her, you know, she's ready to talk. So that helps a lot. If you can kind of, you're kind of doing all the legwork for the media and you're thinking through those aspects, because that's the other pet peeve journalists hate is they get pitched a story. And then once the client starts to dig into it, they realize, oh, the client won't talk, you know, client doesn't want to talk. So-and-so doesn't want to speak on this. So you've just wasted everybody's time. Mm-hmm. So you have to do that legwork in the beginning.
So obviously we're talking about, we want to only really pitch the interesting aspects of law firms, because, I mean, who wants to write about something that's uninteresting? And I think one of the hurdles that law firm leaders face as it pertains to, you know, engaging in PR is that they feel or think that there's not much newsworthy about their practice, and that they don't really have these interesting or valuable stories to tell. What can they do to make their practice more interesting, or what sort of like interesting things can you extract from like the day-to-day, or maybe, I don't know, the practice of law?
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to, how does this impact people? So is it going to have an impact on a certain population? You know, this is where kind of asking a lot of these questions, asking that so what question a lot, you know, so what, digging that part of it out. Is there a human interest story there? The other thing is, you know, and not to just constantly plug a PR firm, but a PR firm will also be keeping a tab on what the media are writing about. And so I'll give you an example. You know, Law 360 put out this call for story. They wanted interesting stories of firms that have collaborated. And, you know, so we got that query because we pitched Law 360 so much and we're on their email chain. And we just sent it to clients. And we had this one client that was like, actually, right after 9/11, this attorney ended up having to drive somewhere like from New York City, like a 10-hour drive somewhere with co-counsel together. So they ended up in a car together. And then that formed a lifelong friendship. So it's that I always joke that we're kind of matchmakers between the media and the firms that we represent, because we are, we're doing that. Oh, they want this. Who has that? And, you know, kind of shopping it around. So, but also just, I think we're all kind of like that. We're all one of two things. We think everything we do is boring, or we think everything we do is amazing and should be covered by the national news. And we get a lot of the clients that think everything is not interesting, until we go, wait, you said, you know, after that kind of digging around and asking them the questions, or the questions of, often a firm will say, well, we got this case, and we'll say, well, was that unusual? Was that important? Was that, why, you know, why did they decide that? Is that normal? And they'll go, oh, actually, no, it's not normal. Or, you know what, I'm not sure I've ever seen a damages amount in this high. And I'll say, well, can you go back and, find out if there's ever been a damages claim of this amount in this particular industry. And if you can frame it right, and look for those. So it's the big, so what question really, but, is this unusual? Is this, have you ever seen this done before? Was there any person involved that had a really interesting story? Or I'll often ask, tell me about the process it took to get there. See if there's anything in there. So it's a lot of those questions that lead to that. Oh, wait, there is something interesting, and it turns into a story.
I have a mental image right now of a client coming to you and pitching you a story, and you going, yeah, so what?
Right. We do a lot of times.
But like, you're so nice that I can't picture you shutting somebody down like that.
Oh, no. Yeah, we have to do it very politely. Yes. Oh,
I'm sure. Well, because you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Yeah, and people think sometimes that they're important, yeah, and they might not be. Yeah. I think we all know somebody like that. We will be right back after this short ad.
When a client calls, they're really looking for immediate service. Because we have Answering Legal, we're able to see every client message and we're able to contact our clients immediately. My name is Margot Gaines, and I'm a partner at Gaines & Musico. We started using Answering Legal because we were unable to answer all of our phone calls. Answering Legal has allowed my firm to get hired on numerous clients that we never would have. We get messages throughout the night and on the weekends. Sometimes we're in court or we're dealing with other clients. And because of Answering Legal, my partner and I are able to address any client concerns or any new clients immediately, and it's really increased our business. Answering Legal has allowed us to service our clients in a way that their needs are met and their phone calls are answered, and we're able to spend more time doing the things that are necessary for our clients.
I think one of the biggest things that all lawyers will agree on is that everyone knows somebody who just tries to win awards.
Oh, yes.
And lawyers are famous for this. They got the badges all over the website. Mm-hmm. They got the awards on the desk. You've never heard of these organizations. You don't know what these plaques mean. But a lot of lawyers try to earn these awards as a quick way to bring positive attention to their practice. But not all awards are created equal. How can lawyers know which awards are sort of high value, which awards are worth displaying? What's your opinion on these awards?
Yeah. So we field award questions a lot. We even wrote a checklist to kind of help clients figure out if an award is worth their time. It's called Is This Legit? I think it's up on our law firm rankings and awards page. So
I'm putting a link to that.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. Absolutely. And there's also a great spreadsheet that another firm created many years ago called the Spammy List that a lot of marketers use. It's shared on, it's a Google sheet. And I can give you a link to that too. But basically, if it looks too good to be true, if the person soliciting you is overly fawning, or, you know, you've been selected, you've never heard of it before is another one. So overly, you know, complimentary, coming out of nowhere, you've never heard of them before, asking, of course, payment. Now, not every award program that requires payment is spammy, but the majority that require payment are spammy. So you kind of have to look at it that way. Never heard of them. They're overly fawning. You go to their website and they have the trend I see are these publications where all they are profiles of their big, beautiful profiles of a company, a firm. And that's all it is. And they publish like once a month, and big firms fall victim to this, not victim. That seems a little overdramatic, but, I don't go by, well, these big firms did it. Somebody made a bad decision in that firm. So, but also look at their audience. You know, the other thing these publications do often is we send to CEOs global worldwide. That's not a targeted audience. So the only great publications that really get the attention of CEOs are, you know, the ones you already know about, you know. So they're brands that you're quite well aware of. Typically you want to be in a more niche publication or media outlet that serves your audience. So, I can give you a link to that list. They're pretty easy. After you get used to it, they're pretty easy to spot. But typically it's because you've never heard of them and they're way too complimentary. Those are the giveaways at the beginning. The other trick to be aware of is and this is another thing we always ask is, if they'll say there's no cost, but then once you agree to it, they'll ask you for a list of all your vendors' information. So what they do is they go to your vendors and ask them to advertise. And we've been hit up for that before too. And the idea they're playing on, you know, if the psychology of your vendors are going to feel bad and want to, and just do it because they feel kind of pressured into doing it, which you don't want to do to your vendors. You want to have a good relationship with the people you do business with. So we always ask that. We ask, is there a fee involved? And are you going to ask for a list of vendors? And that's an automatic no, because we've been involved in several of those situations where we didn't get involved to begin with. And then suddenly the client's like, why are they asking for this list? And, you know, and it's their entire business model, which isn't a great business model. They're not delivering any value. They're just sort of shaming people into paying for ads.
Early in my career, I've never been a person who has had an overinflated ego. But when I, especially when I didn't know what was what, I had several of those like award organizations reach out to me, and I will never forget somebody emailed me saying I'm up for this award. And as a marketer, my first intention was, oh, I'm going to get this award. It's going to be a backlink for the website. I'm taking it.
Right.
So I schedule the call. They call me up. It's free, no cost. They do the interview. And as I'm doing the interview, they're asking me all these questions about my career, my accomplishments. And as I'm answering the questions, I realize that I have nothing of value to provide these answers. Like, how did you get started? It's a startup. We're new. We're this.
Yeah.
And I am just like, if this was like a live interview that people were, I was bombing terribly. Yeah. I had nothing to offer. And at the end, I remember the interviewer saying, oh my God, it sounds like you've accomplished so much in such a short amount of time. And I said, this is a scam. And then of course they wanted like $3,000. I had to write the bio or something. And I was like, okay, yeah, sure. I'll get back to you. Mm-hmm. And I've never had but it's like the Cutco sales thing. You know, you buy the knives or you don't buy the knives, but you write down 10 of your friends and help me out. And then, that person mentioned I can't look cheap and not buy the knives.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I totally get it.
That's funny.
So I think this is my opinion, right? I could totally be wrong. So if I offend you, I'm very sorry. But when I think of PR, I think of, handling a crisis situation. I think of law firms that aren't prepared to handle a crisis situation, especially because we, as marketers, as PR agencies, we tell lawyers, you have to put out this content. You have to engage in social media. You have to be on TikTok. You have to put your face out there. And I think a lot of people will get themselves into trouble not understanding the line between like your opinion on a matter and your extreme opinion that is,
right,
I don't know, like cancel culture worthy, mm-hmm. right? How prepared is the average law firm? How prepared are they to handle a situation where somebody, a representative, maybe not even you, somebody from your firm does something that gets you a ton of negative attention, either in the local or national media, and what can they do about it?
Yeah. Law firms are not as prepared, I would say, as other industries from a PR perspective. And it's basically because, you know, lawyers are in the crisis business. This is what they do, but they're viewing it from a legal perspective, which doesn't play out well in the media, but often they don't understand the difference. So that's often what the challenge is. So they're going to, and look, at the end of the day, staying out of jail is more important than staying off the news. That wins, you know. So, but there is a balance there. And I think where a lot of firms get it wrong is they don't think about the reputation factor when they're, you know, often the instinct is to double down on, you know, the legal route, which is don't comment, you know, we don't, you know, where, and look, not commenting on pending litigation is reasonable, but in a crisis, you have to think through how is this going to play out in the media? And those are two different, we often tell clients, you know, when we're writing something, this doesn't have to stand up in a court of law. So this is a different animal, a different beast. The other problem I see is PR moves wildly fast nowadays. So it used to move fast before the internet, and it moves even faster now. Media outlets will often put up a story before they have all the facts and just update it as they go. So, you know, it used to be that they would wait till they had a full story, and now they'll just get something in the rush to be first. So that's where law firms are kind of failing, is one, understanding the timeliness of it. And lawyers are busy people there, but they don't, that's often our struggle, is we know to rush and to respond and to think about all the implications publicly. You know, but it goes back to law firms aren't immune to the other. You know, I think about all the firms getting cyber attacked nowadays. You know, I mean, this is a big issue. So firms are still vulnerable even to non-PR attack. That can turn into a major PR issue as well if that comes to light. But those are the real critical aspects of that. So, I would say most firms aren't ready. It takes time and foresight to put together a plan and to know how to respond. And it takes working with professionals to help you respond. And if you don't have a relationship with a PR person when that happens, that's going to make it even more difficult. And the other thing is that when we talked about how does PR impact a law firm, if you do have a crisis, the more goodwill you've built up, the more you are a known entity, the more the media know who you are. You're a player in your community. I say player in a good way. You're a community steward. You're a steward of your community. You're regularly featured. A crisis is going to go over much better than it would if you've done nothing and kind of really stayed under the radar.
So I want to switch gears a little bit because I think you're probably the best person I know to ask this to. But for a long time, I think everyone would agree that there were two major players in social media, Facebook and Twitter. Both companies have obviously had their fair share of problems in recent years. Do you still think that lawyers or law firms or organizations should be using these platforms to get messages out about their firm or business or organization? Or should they be shifting their attention towards maybe other social media networks, or should they look sort of at like, I don't know, just the media? Like how should law firms get out these messages about their firms?
I think social media is here to stay for good. It's certainly changing regularly. So, Facebook, I don't know if you've noticed, but like if you look on Facebook right now, finding content from your actual friends is difficult. So Facebook's constantly evolving and it's becoming much more of a paid distribution platform. I still think though there's a sizable audience on Facebook, depending on the type of law that you practice. Of course, Facebook also really channeled people to groups to kind of get people to engage in content from other people that may not be their friends. So that's an opportunity. But certainly for B2B firms, so for business law firms, LinkedIn's hands down would be the number one platform to be on. But for a consumer firm, I still think Facebook's very relevant and valid. It's just understanding how Facebook is prioritizing certain content, whether you have to pay to play in order to get your content seen, and what the strategies are. You can't rely on organic reach on Facebook anymore. That's just not going to happen. I do think, there's a factor of you still need, even though you might not be posting it, or you might not be getting the eyeballs on it that you want, but there's the factor of people will often, when evaluating a firm, will go to their social media feeds and see what they've been posting. So it is another kind of credibility check. Is this firm a reputable firm? What's it like, especially for hiring, laterals, all of that kind of thing? What do they talk about? What's their culture? That kind of thing. But you kind of just have to know what the different, because they're all evolving. I mean, gosh, Twitter is what in the world is Twitter right now? And then Meta came up with a Meta Verified thing that they're going to roll out. So it really is sort of staying on top of what these different platforms are doing. But this is how we communicate nowadays. So although it does shift and evolve. So in other words, don't throw them out, but just more understand how they're changing and what's relevant for you. So Twitter, I'm still kind of just watching to see what happens. I don't know. We're going to just follow the Elon Musk train and see where it goes.
Yeah. Twitter for me is a scary place where I watch celebrities and people who have status above me fight with each other.
Oh, see, Twitter's like a political cesspool to me. Somehow my feed has become a toxic sludge to wade through.
I'm on Twitter to like follow other people. I'm not on Twitter to, I think you get what I'm saying. So say a law firm wants to start a PR strategy. They're not necessarily ready to hire an agency, but so what are some of the PR strategies that firms can do on their own? And what are some of the tasks that you don't recommend that they do on their own that they should get a professional agency to help them with? Like, where's that line?
I mean, you know, I think a law firm can put out a very straightforward press release in a kind of a stick to the facts kind of way and release it to, you know, the general. They're just not going to. So, sure, if they want to do that, they can certainly do that or go the easy way and stick something on the wire and just see what, you know, what happens, how it lands. So that's going to be easy. What else could they do on their own? Honestly, anything can be DIY'd. It's just the effectiveness of the effort. And also, does a law firm want to spend their billable hours on this? You know, that's the other thing. It takes away. We're, as a PR agency, we're much more efficient. We know that we have expensive media databases that we pay for. We have, we've got several, you know, that we're subscribers to, but we're also pitching these outlets on a regular basis. So we can save them a lot of time and trouble by just helping direct it and, you know, get it through the right channels. But certainly if it's incredibly straightforward, let's say they've just hired a new partner and they want to send it to the Business Journal's People on the Move section. That's an easy, you know, easy lift right there. But for the most part, they're just going to struggle and waste time doing it on their own versus working with an agency. So,
yeah, I knew that was a loaded question when I asked it.
Right.
And then I can't help but picture you saying, so what? Like, who cares? I don't know. I just love it. Michelle, if our audience wants to connect with you further, how can they do so? Where should they go? Give me the lay of the land. Absolutely.
Google us. We're Reputation Inc. It's Inc. with a K. And our website is rep-inc.com. And we're all over social media if you look us up there. But the best way is to go to our website. We've got a lot of resources for law firms interested in PR.
Excellent. Michelle, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. This is Michelle Calcote King. Thank you to all of our listeners. We hope you enjoyed this conversation, and we will be back with another episode of Everything Except the Law soon. Be sure to check out previous episodes of the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, and the Answering Legal YouTube channel. Links to everything covered in today's episode and everything that I promised we would link to can be found in the description of this episode. And we hope to see you next time, everyone.